Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. This evening, our guest is Dave Ford of Soul Buffalo Expeditions. Just a moment, Dave will be with us and tell you all about the wonderful things that he is up to. This is Pledge Week here at KBMF, and I just wanted to let you know that you can contribute to our efforts, which are beautiful here in Butte. The website address where you can contribute is butteamericaradio.org, or you can call in the pledge drive number 406-782-2264. And you can also find us, Heartstock Radio, on Facebook or email us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. This is Heartstock. I'm your host, Carol Murphy. In just a moment, we will be back with Dave Ford. Thanks for listening. Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm your host, Carol Murphy, and today our guest is Dave Ford of Soul Buffalo Expeditions. Hello, Dave.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Fantastic. Dave is actually joining us from upstate New York, and he's based in Baltimore. Is that right?
I'm from Baltimore, but based in upstate New York. But yeah, lived for years in New York City. So living out in the country, got the best of both worlds.
Baltimore is an interesting city. That's actually where I went to dental school, but that's a whole nother show, a whole nother topic.
It sure is.
Introduce our listeners to the work that you're doing at Soul Buffalo Expeditions.
Sure. So we work with some of the biggest companies in the world, helping to culturally infuse their sustainability goals, mostly through their senior ranks. But we essentially take their top people out and drop them directly into some of the world's biggest challenges.
Fascinating. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, we've run expeditions for years and, you know, just realized that sort of the time for sustainability practices coming to the forefront, and, you know, with climate change and ocean plastics and just a myriad of challenges facing big corporations and the world, that, you know, it was an interesting opportunity to take some of these executives out and show them firsthand what's happening. And, you know, we just really believe that being able to experience directly just has, like, such a different impact. I mean, you can read reports and understand that there's problems out there, but it's a whole different ballgame when you experience them directly. So whether it's climate change or wildlife conservation issues, ocean plastics is one of our really big focuses as of late. Really makes a difference.
And how did you get into this line of work? Sounds like it's a real heart-centered mission that might be near and dear to you. Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I was at a crossroads in my life in my sort of late 20s and was just working in a field that wasn't really lighting me up inside. And I had decided to travel for a couple of years, and it just totally changed the trajectory of my life. I was spent a lot of time in South America, a lot of time in the Amazon. I went to Antarctica, which was a really pinnacle trip with respect to this company, because I met our chief expedition officer there, who, you know, we essentially decided to partner together and start this company. started climbing mountains, really just totally opened me up to the power, you know, of experience, but also, you know, just connected me, you know, directly with the earth. So that's kind of how this all sort of the seed of how this all started.
I'd love to talk a little bit more about the what you just said about having a direct connection to the earth. But before we go there, can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing before that just wasn't lighting you up inside?
I actually worked in radio at that time. Back in the day. It was right when the iPod came around. It was right when radio really started to have a hard time as a medium. Right at that inflection point. And I was a radio sales guy, and I was very good at it, but it wasn't inspiring me. Let's put it that way. It wasn't fulfilling in the way that I hoped my work would be.
And how did you get into radio? Where did you grow up?
Grew up in Baltimore. I managed rock bands in my early 20s. Found a way to get a gig at the biggest rock station in Baltimore. And I ended up working for a big rock station in DC as well. But it was absolutely by accident, to answer your question.
What neighborhood in Baltimore did you grow up in?
I grew up in a little town called Parkville, which is in Baltimore County, probably like 10 minutes outside of the city.
What do you think of Sweebo?
Sweebo, is that that's a neighborhood?
It's a neighborhood. Have you been to Sweebo in Baltimore?
I'm sure I have. Where is it near? It's not like ringing up. Is that where you lived there?
Yeah, so the dental school and medical school are right downtown, right across the street from the projects, and Sweebo is just on the other side of the projects. That's a very, very, well, for a girl from Montana, it was an eye-opening experience.
I can imagine. Baltimore is a very interesting place, amazing place.
It is. So you decided after your travels, your world travels, that you were going to found a company that was going to do what?
There's a little bit in between there. I moved to New York City and worked in advertising, and it kind of came about as happenstance, really. The chief expedition officer that I mentioned earlier, that I met in Antarctica, reached out to me, and he was looking for a partner in the U.S., a Hungarian guy. And he's been to every country in the world and run tours in 180 countries, and knew that I had marketing chops and knew that I sort of knew a lot of people. And at first, I couldn't imagine. I was taken aback and, you know, didn't think that it had the kind of legs that I would need to start a business. But the more and more I thought about it, it just felt more and more aligned and sort of just jumped in the deep end really quickly. You know, I started a company that was based on consumers and taking people on family trips and otherwise. But then my really deep, you know, business relationships. So very quickly we decided to start a company that didn't seem like anybody else was doing out there. And it was 5 years ago, and we've been doing a lot of really amazing stuff all over the world with corporate groups ever since.
And this deep connection that you found yourself in with planet Earth, how has that impacted what you do?
Well, you know, I think, you know, going to the Amazon and just understanding that ecosystem firsthand and experiencing going to Antarctica and really starting to understand climate change in a deeper way, really just like the foundation, and just realizing that we're so many problems out there that we just don't have a lot of time to fix. And that, you know, the way this world is set up, industry has a tremendous opportunity to really be a catalyst. So kind of coming from the business side over to the environmental side. And really that's kind of what we do as a business. We really bridge industry and conservation. Just was a really unique spot, and there wasn't really anyone else out there doing it in quite the same way that we imagined. So sort of all driven by, you know, how can we get these big companies to take an even bigger interest in solving some of the world's problems. You know, there's 192 governments out there, you know, so even if half of those governments were doing everything right, you know, there would still be a huge void. So industry is really interesting in that, you know, a lot of these companies are multinational. They have offices all over the world, and they have the different type of consistency in just the way that they're managed. So they really can take a different sort of long-term approach than a lot of governments that leaders change, you know, like in this country, can go from take wild swings from one side to the other in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your partner. Do you have more than one partner? You know, who are they and what roles does everyone play?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're a small company. We have three core partners, and then, you know, we have a lot of people that work for us on individual projects. You know, the recent thing that we really just 3 weeks ago pulled off is probably like an amazing way to put it. But we took 162 executives out into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and we did an ocean plastic intensive where we, you know, had big plastic companies and right next to Greenpeace and some of the bigger environmental NGOs. And we hit a ton of plastic out in the Atlantic Gyre, which is the ocean current in the Atlantic, which is one of the big places where a lot of the high concentration of plastics end up. So we ran a solutions accelerator out there, and it was really blew all of us away with just how much plastic, but just the incredible outcomes that we got of putting all these thought leaders together. You know, we had National Geographic, World Wildlife Fund, I mentioned Greenpeace, Dow Chemical, Clorox, Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, all together rolling up their sleeves, talking about how we can, you know, accelerate these solutions.
The perception, you know, maybe I should speak to my perceptions as opposed to generalizing, but there can be some perceptions of, you know, these big conglomerate companies that are multinational, and they just really don't care because they don't seem to be making, you know, a bottle of laundry detergent in something other than plastics. Are they really serious about this? And, you know, what kind of solutions did they come up with?
You know, I think it's universally understood in industry. And one of the biggest challenges is that plastic is incredibly durable, incredibly lightweight, and incredibly cheap. So consumers want to get their laundry detergent for a certain price that they're accustomed to paying. And if they were going to all of a sudden switch to a different material and have to pay $2 to $3 more, there's a potential that could actually hurt the market share of these companies. So I think that one of the main things that most people do realize is that there's a place for plastic in our cars and our long-term durable goods. But, you know, most of these companies really, you know, definitely the companies that were on the ship realize that this is a big issue and that, you know, they got to get around it because it has a chance to be like a real existential threat to their businesses. So, you know, I think there's this conception that, you know, there's a lot of these Mr. Burns from The Simpsons type characters in these big companies that are just looking at the balance sheets. But, you know, from firsthand experience, I can tell you that there's just so many incredible people, you know, some of the, you know, biggest companies in the world, and some that people would say are, you know, part of the problem, the big plastic companies or the big oil companies or the big soft drink companies. But there is this collective energy to really want to figure out how to get on the other side of this. And, you know, with respect to solutions, you know, there's a lot. I mean, we call this summit the Ocean Plastic Leadership Summit. So we really thought it was important to represent all sides of the solution set. And that sort of spans from solutions that are focused on bag bans and preventing plastic to get into the market all the way through recycling, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. And then sort of in the middle would be like alternative materials and technology. And, you know, what's it going to look like in 10 years? You know, right now there's a tremendous amount of energy around this issue. It's like absolutely in the cultural zeitgeist. You know, I think there's been enough news reports of whales beaching with 60 pounds of plastic in their stomach and turtles with straws up their nose. I mean, like consumers are demanding it. You know, there's a reason big retailers need to figure this out because their consumers are demanding it. You know, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, this reaction to what's happening to the wildlife out there. But when you actually, that's what you do see, the plastic bags in the whale, you know, as opposed to like the microplastics, which is even scarier, you know, the little tiny organisms that are eating the plastic that breaks down. I mean, this seas are really, there's just like conception that there are these giant trash islands, which happens when there's hurricanes or like big events in different areas. And certainly some areas of the world are just really, you know, Southeast Asia specifically, you know, there's a, just a tremendous amount of pollution going into the oceans. But in reality, it's more of like a plastic smog or a plastic soup that's coming together. So when you can get in the water and see that firsthand and see these tiny little particles, it's really eye-opening to say the least.
Well, and one little factoid that a previous guest pointed out is the chemical nature of plastics by virtue of, you know, what they attract. It's not just the plastic, it's all the other nasty chemicals that they come in contact with that stick to them. So it's introducing some very frightening chemicals into the food chain. And all of the organisms in the ocean, eventually they get into our diet and just on and on. It's,
you know, there's still, there's a lot of studies out there trying to figure out just what the health impacts are on plastic being on the food chain. And it's scary. And it's, but I will say that it's in the consciousness in a different way than it was, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, even 2 years ago. So that's a good thing. There's been a lot of energy put into this topic, and it is a topic, it is absolutely fixable, you know, and solvable. So, and one of the good things is that it's not as undeniable. It's different ballgame than climate change. You don't have a lot of debate. There's plastic in the ocean. We need to get it out and stop it from going in there. And, you know, regardless of who you are on what side of the spectrum, that's just generally understood.
Mm-hmm. So we're at about that halfway point. We're going to take a quick moment, listen to some music, and we will be right back with Dave Ford of Soul Buffalo Expeditions. This is Heartstock. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Heartstock. I'm your host, Carol Murphy, and today we have our guest from Soul Buffalo Expeditions, Dave Ford. Thanks again, Dave, for being with us.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Let's talk a little bit about your process and how you decide which expeditions to do and how you gather your people.
Sure. So a lot of times it's going to be based on the client that we're working with. I mean, so we have multi-stakeholder summits, like I just mentioned, what we did where we brought an entire industry together out on in bigger expeditions, right? Like 150 to 200 people. So, you know, we have plans to do the same thing climate related up in Greenland, and are working on some opportunities there. But a lot of it comes from the challenges that are happening inside of these different business spectrums. So, I mean, like climate change, for example, you could do something with the insurance industry, which is, you know, very much at risk. A lot of times you're looking at pain points, right? For the plastic producers, their pain points are, you know, sort of what's becoming so widespread for lack of a better way of putting it, sort of negative impressions about plastics for the insurance industry. So that's a huge existential risk for them. For the insurance industry, it's, you know, climate change is a big deal for, especially for insurers that work in catastrophe. We also will sometimes work with programming sort of education and leadership teams with the companies that we work with. So for example, we did something in Zimbabwe. Last couple of years, we've done a lot of work in Zimbabwe around anti-poaching, where we'll bring all the NGOs in the area together to bring these really complex systems challenges to life and then sort of juxtapose those with some of the problems that the company is experiencing. So it doesn't always have to be like a direct correlation, but we're exploring agriculture, you know, really look at the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals and look at the key tent poles that different companies have inside of that framework, and then bring the expedition to life. So, you know, while we do a lot of Arctic and Antarctic and Africa and Southern India sort of end of the earth type experiences, we also could do something on a farm in California, in where there's a tremendous amount of challenges that are happening, you know, whether it be food waste or, on and on with respect to agricultural droughts. You know, we're looking at doing a wildfire summit in California, you know, where we would take people to paradise, sort of right in the base of, you know, what happened out there over the course of the last years. And you know, we can erect tent cities, you know, but the real key for us is to not be in a hotel, to not be in your like traditional conference space, to do everything we can do to get people off the grid, because it just changes the dynamics. You know, we love to do stuff on ships because, you know, people are on ships, you know, when the Wi-Fi doesn't work, we are thrilled about it. Usually we have to offer it, but if there's a chance we can get in a place where there's no Wi-Fi, we try to do that whenever we can.
And I posted a video that I found in, I believe it was Delhi, India. You were working on, was this part of the plastics summit that you had? You're working on trash?
Yeah, we were doing some research trip there where we were looking at some of the landfills in Delhi, which are like mountains surrounding the city, not even surrounding the city, they're in the city. I think at one point they were like the outskirts of the city. But yeah, when we were doing a wildlife expedition in southern India at the time, around the sort of elephant issues of Bandipur National Park, where like death by elephant is a very popular way to go in this region. There's like a lot of human wildlife conflict, you know, with farmers for trying to protect their crops and elephants not being down with that. So we were looking at this really unique ecosystem where farmers are actually killing tigers, and where, you know, if the tiger goes in this ecosystem that we were in, everything goes, and just how important it is to have those apex predators in the area. But then we did a research trip up in Delhi where we were looking at doing some stuff there, you know, and India is definitely a hotbed for the plastics issue because there's just so much trash. You know, it's one of the countries that is on the cusp of banning certain single-use plastics, which is pretty incredible. But there's also like an incredible waste picker community inside of India, where people there are, you know, their livelihood is getting trash, getting value out of trash, you know, so through recycling and other means.
Well, and it's always interesting, like you were saying, when you go someplace that has really serious trash issues and you see it, like, you know, trash soup off of the beach and huge, huge layers of trash on the beach. It's pretty alarming, but like you were saying, it seems like this is not rocket science. You know, you just institute changes, but that's really difficult. Like in Indonesia, where I experienced it firsthand, it was like an instantaneous shift from everything being packaged in something that was decomposable to now plastic bags and plastic bottles. But yet it's processed the same way that the organic material was processed, which means it's dumped in the river, then it goes to the ocean. So how do you solve that problem? Because it almost, you have to change an entire government, an entire nation's thinking about how to handle their trash.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, you know, a cultural issue a lot, first and foremost, for a lot of these countries, you know, and a lot of people feel like they have a right to have plastic, and that there is, you know, if the Western world gets to use plastic, why don't they, you know? So there's that piece of it. The government, you know, regulation piece as well. I mean, there's a lot of proposals that are out in the world right now around taxing virgin plastic to incentivize the secondary use of plastic. You know, there's so many different building waste infrastructure. There's an industry group called the Alliance to End Plastic Waste that's anchored by Procter & Gamble, that a lot of the petrochemical companies are a part of, that are raised $1.5 billion to build infrastructure to handle all this waste. Part of the problem in a lot of underdeveloped places in the world is they just don't have the infrastructure to handle it, you know, or if they are picking up the trash, there's just nowhere to take it. Now, in this country, we're pretty land rich. So, you know, there are plenty of landfills, but in some of these other countries, there are not, or they bud right up to the ocean. Like in the Maldives, the landfills bud right up to the ocean, and the Maldives is, you know, very, very sort of at ground zero of the climate change issue and rising seas issue. So, you know, and it's just that a lot of it's education and changing habits, and it's pretty complex and far from easy.
Yeah, definitely. So what does the future hold for your company?
More big multi-stakeholder summits, I would say. You know, we really believe like you can move the needle, and in an accelerated way, when you take people even for 4 days, and people that are brilliant and that are, you know, not also introducing different types of brilliance to the cohort, and that you can really drive change from that, you know. So out of this summit, you know, we had one of the big things that came out of it was this idea of a packageless aisle in retail. So we're talking a lot of big retailers right now. What would that look like to walk into a Target or a Walmart or your supermarket, and there's a packageless aisle where everything that you get in that aisle is without a package? There's a lot of different companies and experiments that are happening right now around the idea of, like, you know, refillable stations. You know, in the Philippines, for example, there's a place where you can go refill your shampoo bottle, because part of the problem in Southeast Asia is, you know, a lot of people that are, you know, struggling to make ends meet, they'll just buy like a single little sachet, which is like a single use shampoo, because they don't have the money to buy a full bottle. So one of the initiatives that's being introduced in the Philippines is, you know, you get a big bottle and you just take it and refill it, you know, at the filling station. And you end up paying less to do that than you would if you had to buy the package.
It seems to me that we're not going to totally recycle ourselves out of this deal, and that really my intuition tells me the real key here is alternative materials. But we're kind of sort of running out of time, so maybe that's another program. How might folks find you, Dave?
You can find me on Twitter at DaveFord88. You can find me on LinkedIn. My email is dave@soulbuffalo.com. Lots of different ways. One Instagram is as Dave Ford. Mm-hmm. I actually have the Dave Ford handle. There's a lot of Dave Fords out there, but somehow that happened.
Thank you so much for being on Heartstock. And remember that this is Pledge Week. 406-782-2263. This is Heartstock. I'm Carol Murphy. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via livestream at butteamericaradio.org.
That's